Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 18th of Cheshvan. Let's start by thanking Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, David Hachhauser, and the OU for putting the shirim online, making them available to you. It just occurred to me as I was about to say that you can track when I recorded which shirim by whether or not I remembered. I think there was a whole time when I just didn't remind myself that I should be having gratitude for this great favor that the OU and Rabbi Abramowitz and David Hachhauser are doing for me. So you could actually follow that online if you want to, and know when I did which, when I recorded which shiurim, because I certainly don't record them the day before, because I'm not that kind of a person who can trust myself to always be available to do these things. So I do them way ahead of time. It happens to be that I'm recording, you know, the 18th of Cheshvan on the 11th day of Av, of the summer before, just after Tisha B'Av, of the summer before, you're going to be hearing the shiurim. So today we're going to see a response of Rav Ovadia Yosef, Shu'ot Yabia Omer, the first volume, the Yerideya section of that volume, Siman Yutet, response number 19. And it's a response he wrote in Cairo on the 18th of Cheshvan. He dates it the 18th of Cheshvan of Tavshin Chet, which is a year that many of us know as the year that of Israeli independence, but this is of Cheshvan, so it's 1947, before Eretz Israel, before the state of Israel is an actual reality in any way. And he's in Cairo briefly as an Avetin. It didn't work out so well for him, and he went back to Eretz Israel soon. I think he was in Cairo for like 2 years. So he's a young man in Cairo. If this is 1947, he's in the area, he's 27 years old, I think. So he says it's a common occurrence. It's masi b'chol yom. He doesn't mean literally every day, but it's a common occurrence in Egypt that when women want to convert. So I don't know why, but I think it's an interesting fact to notice that in 1947 in Cairo, which was very much a Muslim country at the time and would very soon become one of the sworn enemies of the state of Israel for 30 years until they made a peace treaty, you had women. Arab women, I gotta assume, Christian Arabs, Muslim Arabs, but women converting to Judaism. And the question was, how do you have that conversion happen? So the common custom was that the judges of the Beit Din, the men who sit on the Beit Din, on the court that's overseeing the conversion, don't stand there in the room when she immerses herself in the mikvah. Let's remember that conversion involves a kabbalat ol mitzvot, an acceptance and agreement to perform the mitzvot, and then an immersion in a mikvah. So that immersion in the mikvah, for men, if you wanted the court to see it, it's not, there's no issue because they're all men, so it's fine. You stand in the room, you watch the guy, you know, immerse in the mikvah. With women, it's a more delicate procedure, and that's what he's going to be discussing today. So he says that they would stand outside the room. While they're standing outside the room, they would let her, and this is part of the conversion process, modi'im la miksat mitzvot kalot v'chamurot. They tell her some serious mitzvot and some more. It's not that they're lighter mitzvot, they're treated more lightly. People think of them as more light, as less significant, as less problematic, as less difficult. And the point is to make sure she has some sense of the range of obligations that are involved in Judaism, that she can accept it upon herself and say, yes, I accept upon myself that we're doing things. V'tovel. Then she immerses bifnei isha yisraelit. And there's a Jewish woman in the room who says, yes, she immersed. So that's the custom in Cairo at the time. Rav Yosef is unhappy about the custom because it's the exact opposite of what, or it's not the opposite, but it's different than, he says it was the hefech, but it's different than, for sure, what the Shulchan Aruch has. If you look in Reish Samechet, Seif Bet, in 268, paragraph 2, I'm pretty sure this is in Yerideya, The Shulchan Aruch says, an isha, a woman, nashim moshivot utavamayim ad savara, women make sure or put her into the water until her neck. The judges are outside until that point. They talk to her about some mitzvos, and then the Shulchan Aruch says, so that part isn't so different, but the Shulchan Aruch says, v'achar kach tovelet bifnehem, she immerses in front of them. And then the Shulchan Aruch says, "V'heim machzirim pneihem." Then they turn their faces the other way and leave the room. They don't see her getting out of the water. So that sounds like they have to see her go under the water. So the problem is, says Rav Yosef, that our mikvaot, the water is clear. So you can't have it today. Now, he's assuming, I'm not saying he's wrong at all, I think it might likely be right, he's assuming that historically, when you say a woman goes into a mikvah, and she goes in until her neck, and then the men come in, It's because they can't see anything. Because the water is dirty or muddy or whatever the issues with the water are, it's so opaque that there's no seeing going on. So nowadays, if you have mikvaot that have clearer water, which in and of itself is not a bad thing, but it creates this issue of what do you do about it? Because it's clearly inappropriate, and nobody's disagreeing about that. It's clearly inappropriate. You don't want it to have it happen that the men are seeing her even through the water, seeing her fully naked. And so therefore, he was asked about what to do about it. So what do we do about it? So he says, the first step is going to be the question of how vital, how necessary is it that in fact the judges see her immersed in the mikvah. So he goes back to the Gemara. The Gemara in Yevamot, Mimzayin Amid Bet 47b, has a bright that says, Tanina, Nitra, Pei, Matbilin, Notomiyad. Once, see, with a man, there's an extra step to conversion that the man has to be circumcised. In those days, men weren't circumcised unless they were Jewish. Today, you might have people who are circumcised anyway, and then you need a hatavat tambri, but that wouldn't need as much of a recovery. Point being that once a man, when a man has had a brit milah, going to a mikveh isn't necessarily the next thing he wants to do, especially when the place of the wound is sore. So once he's recovered from what for an adult for sure is a relatively painful and a little bit serious, not serious like life-threatening, but a painful operation. Once he's recovered, then he goes to mikvah, and the description for the man is, Shnei Tamidei Chachamim, two Torah scholars, stand there and wash him immersed. Then for a woman, this brayta says, women, like we said before, like the Shulchan Aruch has it, women put her in the water. And then again it says, Ubet Tamidei Chachamim, two Torah scholars stand outside, they talk to her about mitzvos, and then they watch her immersed. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about two? Rav Yochanan said that you need a court, you need a three. I'm sorry, I added into the Gemara that's not there. The Gemara doesn't mention that she has to do the immersion in front of them. They have to stand nearby and talk to her about mitzvos and get the Kabbalah on mitzvos, but it sounds like they have to be nearby, not they have to be in front of her seeing her there. And therefore, you might think that even though we do agree that you need a Beit Din because we need a court, because it's an example of a mishpat. It's an example of a kind of a judgment. Rashi says on that Gemara that it's a mishpat because the Torah says in a couple of places, mishpat echad yelachem lager ule ezrach haaretz. There's one law for you and for the ger, and that suggests, sorry, it's actually in one place, but one place is good enough. The Torah refers to a mishpat echad being one law, one set of rules for regular Jews and for born Jews, I should say, and for converts. And that teaches the Gemara that the process of becoming a convert has a mishpat aspect to it, has a court-like aspect, a judgment-like aspect to it, and therefore you would need a beit, you would need three, not two. But it would at least seem like that standing on the outside and knowing that she's immersing should be good enough, and therefore you wouldn't need the judges in the room at all, and that would get rid of all sorts of problems. We have a similar idea, suggests Rav Yosef. And you know, I forgot to mention before that we don't often see Rav Yosef as we might have liked, because A, his tshuvot are often very, very long, because he, in my experience of it, maybe this isn't the only reason, he knew so much that tacking up any topic would lead him into a long discourse on it, in terms of he would see many different aspects to it, and he would also know much literature about it that he felt like he wanted to quote all of the literature on it. That meant that many of his tshuvot are too long for our purposes here. And then also, he is not as assiduous about applying dates to his tshuvot as other mishivim are, so that when I call up certain dates, as I do, as I'm searching for dates for tshuvot to share with you, I don't as often find tshuvot of his coming up in my list. So when I have an opportunity to, I take advantage of that opportunity. So now here we are. He's trying to give you another example of a situation where we say that you don't need to actually see it to know that it has happened. Because if I can argue that if they stand outside, they watch the woman go in, and she goes in with another Jewish woman who can attest to what happened, and in lots of areas of halacha, we trust the word of women, and so that they can speak to her, and from speaking to her, they'll know that she's in there, and they'll speak to her, and she'll accept the mitzvot, and then the other woman will say she went in. If that would be good, that would solve the problem. That would be what they were doing in Cairo until this time. So an example of that is that we do say in the halacha, in the question of kiddushei bia, that let's say somebody decides, we frown on this in our times, and already in the worst time they frowned on it, but let's say somebody wanted to create marriage through living together. through living together, but the act of living together. And I don't mean they move into an apartment together. I mean, they're going to have relations as an act of kiddushin, and then they'll have another set of relations or another set of living together as an act of nisuin, and they'll be married. So by din d'oraita, by Torah law, that was permissible. But how are you going to, but we also hold that you need to have witnesses to a wedding ceremony, and without the witnesses, the ceremony isn't valid. It's not only a question of we know it's happened, you have to have witnesses. So how can you have witnesses for bia, witnesses for the fact they've lived together, they've had sexual relations as husband and wife? Where it says, that in fact, if two witnesses see a man and a woman go into a room to be secluded together with the intent of consummating their relationship, that we're allowed to assume that that's what happened. And that will be good enough in that wedding ceremony. So we have it today, not that it happens in the yichud room at weddings, but that's part of what's going on there. They're eidei yichud, and by virtue of being eidei yichud, we have the right to assume that certain things go on inside, and that's good enough. So if that's true, then maybe you can apply that logic here and say, as long as they watched her go to the mikvah, and they spoke to her while she was in the mikvah, and then the other woman told her that she immersed, maybe that's good enough. They don't have to actually see it themselves. Another support for that idea is Gemara Yevamot Mimheyom in Bet. Somebody used to make, that there was a certain man who people were making fun of. I'm not sure why they were making fun of him. It's not the right thing to do. But they were calling him a bar arbiata. They were saying, you're not even really Jewish. Your mother's not Jewish. So Rav Asi said, I don't understand what they're talking about. She certainly went to mikvah to not be a nida. So this is an interesting thing. In our times, I'm not sure you would be able to say such a thing. Rav Asi is pointing out that the mother has lived her life as a Jewess, and the people who are calling this guy bar armiyata are trying to say, your mother isn't really Jewish. She never properly converted, and therefore you're not really Jewish. If you wanted to think that they're maybe trying to do something positive, they're trying to get him to realize that he needs to convert, or you know, some have kind of a formal conversion process. I'm not sure exactly what's going on there. You have to think about it, and we'd have to talk about it another time. But the point for our issue is that Rav Asi says, but she goes to mikvah because she's a good Jewish woman. Today, unfortunately, you can imagine people who had a problematic conversion, and they don't go to mikvah because they don't keep those halachot. They don't keep the laws of what we call in English family purity, the laws of nida, right? The laws of a woman noticing her menstrual period, separating from her husband during that time, and then after it's over, going to mikvah. But Rav Asi is sure that this man's mother did do that, and his point is, if we know that she went to mikvah to get rid of being a nida, then that's going to mikvah. And since conversion only needs going to mikvah, then she's done it. So she's fully converted. She had a Kabbalah, right? So Tosos say there, that's strange though, because we say that conversion requires a Beit Din. And Tosos suggested answer is, Chiyivan Shiyadua Lakol Shetavla. Since everybody knows that she goes to mikvah, how does everybody know she goes to mikvah? Because everybody goes to mikvah. Ke'ilu omdim sham dami. It's as if the judges are standing there. So Rav Yosef says, so for that view in Tosfos, clearly it's true that if we know that a conversion, an immersion has happened, apparently we're allowed to assume that we're allowed to count that immersion as conversion, as the immersion you need for conversion. And that would be all the more true in the Cairo case, because in the Cairo case, there's three judges standing right there. They're just standing outside the room. And the Rashbat in a tshuva, or Shimon ben Tzemach Duran in a tshuva, said that, similarly, immersion in front of three, immersion even not in front of three, allows a convert to marry into the Jewish people, but the Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot, the acceptance of the Torah and the commandments and the assumption of the obligation to fulfill the Torah, that has to happen in front of three judges, and that has to happen before the immersion. And Tosfos Arosh also says that Bidyeved, that he doesn't say you can do it to begin with, and then we'll talk about what counts as bedieved or not. I often stress that bedieved means only that it's already happened, but it's not quite true, because it happens to be that halachically, there are certain circumstances where it's so difficult to fulfill the halacha the way it's supposed to be fulfilled, that it becomes a sha'at ha'tchak, and there are cases where poskim will say, a sha'at ha'tchak, a time of stress or pressure or trouble, can be like a bedieved situation, and therefore we'll say, and we're going to see some examples of that later in this responsum, we'll say that you can rely on a bidyevet thing. So theoretically, if Cairo was a situation where having the judges in the room itself would be such a problem, you might say to yourself, well, Tosfos HaRosh tells you that it can be like a bidyevet, and bidyevet, if she goes to mikvah, not in front of three, nonetheless, she's a full convert. So those are all opinions that would suggest that maybe there's a way to have an immersion for mikvah, and not only about women, but anybody, but immersion certainly for women in mikvah for the purpose of conversion that would not be literally physically witnessed by men and yet be a valid conversion. Problem is, the Rambam in the 14th chapter of Hilchos Yisurei Bia Halacha Vav says, with a woman, the judges are outside, they tell her some of the halachos, and then she's sitting in the water, and then the Rambam says, and this is where he understood the Gemara apparently, v'acharkach, Tovelet bifnehem, she emerges in front of them, and that's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskin. Now, and he throws in, and the Ramah doesn't disagree. Sefer Eshkol had it that way, the Meiri had it that way, the Riaz had it that way, and then he says, Ravai Yosef, v'chayavim anu lekabel be'ema divrei rabotein harishonim, we have to, with awe, accept what those who came before us said, and that's the way that was, because that's the psak of the Shulchan Aruch without the Ramah complaining about it or saying anything about it or glossing it and saying that Ashkenaz do something different. Without thinking that it's my place to disagree with or anything, I would just point out, I think there are cases where Shulchan Aruch says something and we struggle with it and we try to find ways around it, we find ways to say that we don't have to follow that way or this way. Here, an example would be saying what he was talking about. It's not a shadat chak, not a time of stress or pressure, but with a change in the water character of the mikvah or of the sensitivities that people have. Meaning, theoretically, I could imagine somebody saying, you know what, there was a time when sensitivities to nudity were different than they are today. It was more of a fact of life than it is today, and therefore, it's different today, and therefore, we can rely on opinions that originally had not been followed. I could imagine somebody saying that. Not the way he's going to go. It's just this declaration of we have to accept, you know, be'ema with awe. I think that that's a little bit overdone. He's saying that here I think we have to accept it, and it means that we're ignoring, like he pointed out himself, we're ignoring opinions of the Rishon who might have allowed doing something else. He's going to come up with a better solution, I think, anyway, but it's just worth watching the back and forth. He says, and Moshe Feinstein as well required the presence of a Beit Din. Moshe Feinstein felt the presence of a Beit Din was ma'akev even b'di'eved. It was ma'akev even, it is necessary and indispensable even after the fact, meaning if a Beit Din did it wrong, in other words, if a court did the conversion and weren't in the room for it and they just happened not to be there, Moshe Feinstein seemed to believe that you'd have to do it again, you'd have to go to another, you'd have to do it again in front of other people because otherwise, they would never have written it in the books to begin with, says Rosh Feinstein, because for men to see a woman and possibly see her in a compromising position, even if we're talking about dirty water, well, they'll never see her. It's still true that they fear it, that they know she's not wearing any clothing under the water, and they're watching her immerse in the water. So Rosh Feinstein says it's got to be that that's necessary. Because if it wasn't necessary, you wouldn't recommend it in any way because there's at least the appearance of a lack of tznius to it, of a lack of modesty, a lack of appropriate staying away from witnessing what we're not supposed to witness, from thinking about what we're not supposed to think about, and all those core types of things. So that's what Moshe Feinstein had. It must be a b'di'evet thing as well, otherwise we never would have had such a halacha. Now, if you remember that Gemara that said about the Bar Miyuta guy, the guy who people say, oh, you're not really Jewish, and Ravasi said, and I said his mother goes to mikvah for tefillah, and we said that sounds like her going to mikvah for being a nida, to get rid of being a nida, can count as the conversion ceremony. What would the Rambam do with that Gemara? So it happens to be the Rambam has another psak in Hilchos Yisurei Bia 13:9, which touches on that, which we're then going to have to understand. He says, if we see a woman who converted, we don't know that she converted. We know that she says she's converted, basically, and we see her keeping halacha. So keeping halacha, the Rambam gives examples. She goes to mikvah for being a nida. She separates truma when she has produce and things like that. And so too, a ger, a male convert, does such a thing. That says, they're bechezkat gerei tzedek. We can trust that they are. We have a presumption that they have properly converted, even though we don't have in front of us any actual witnesses to the conversion. But then he adds, v'afapichein ein mesin, we don't let them marry into the Jewish people until they can bring some kind of witnesses to their actual conversion, or they will be tovel in front of us, or they go to mikvah in front of us for conversion. So the problem with that is, as the Magen Mishnah points out there, is that the Gemara that we spoke about, the guy in Yevamos, who was a Bar HaMiyuta, he already exists. So apparently she had married into the Jewish people without anybody knowing for sure that she had converted. And now we're trying to figure out what to do to retroactively say that this guy is a born Jew. So when Ravashi, we originally had Ravashi, now it's Ravashi in the Magen Mishnah, says, but didn't you go to mikveh for her nida? That doesn't sound like it means in the Rambam, it means that counts because, again, he thinks that the conversion has to happen in front of people. So therefore, the Magen Mishnah suggests that what he means is that if you see a woman who's keeping the Torah properly and fully, like all other Jews, then you have the right to assume, if you're forced to, because you're retroactively going to worry about this son, you have the right to assume that her original conversion must have been valid, even though ordinarily we require her to bring witnesses before we would let her marry into the Jewish people. Witnesses of the conversion went well. If you have children out there already whose Jewish status is a problem, but this mother has been keeping the Torah well their whole lives, then we have the right, the Rambam, the Magen Mishnah understands the Rambam to be saying that we can rely on that to say that, yeah, she must have been a good convert. The conversion must have been done properly and appropriate when it was done. So based on the rulings of the Shulchan Aruch, the Reva Yosef assumes, based on, it doesn't really matter to us, but if you have a Shulchan Aruch that has two opinions and then later comes up with, in another place, as just the Stam opinion, just says something casual, we follow that, that would sound like the Shulchan Aruch thinks that Bidi Eved, if it's already happened and you have no way around it, we can treat somebody as a Ger Gomer, as a full convert, even if they went to Mikvah, not in front of the actual judges. So if that's true, then Reva Yosef is troubled by it, because in fact, two of the three postgame that the Shulchan Aruch usually relies on, the Rambam and the Rif, thought it had to be in front of three judges, even b'di'evan, and so did other Rishonim. He quotes the Ramban and the Rashba and the Ritva and the Mugi Yosef, etc. So he goes into a whole discussion there, Achron, who did hold that, in fact, the Shulchan Aruch meant even b'di'evan, she has to have done it in front of, she has to have gone to mikvah in front of the judges, and if not, that's an invalid conversion. There are those who thought that, no, b'di'evan is valid. That's not our topic today, because everybody agrees that l'chadchila, that the option that's supposed to be lived out is that she goes to mikvah in front of three judges. So that's all a way of establishing that rule. And that creates now the problem for the Cairo custom. The Cairo custom was the judges sit in the outside room and didn't actually see her go to mikveh at all. So, but if you really need to have the judges there, Rabbi Yosef says, then our second issue is, so what do we do not to see naked women? Right? So he says, first of all, in Cairo, there was the rabbi of Cairo. I don't know if he was still living or not, but I think Avram ben Shimon, Maharab ben Shimon, he had an idea. He said, you bring a big, I think today would be like a tarp, and you place the tarp on top of all of the mikveh water, and she takes part of the tarp and she covers herself with it as she walks down into the mikveh, so that when she's answering the questions of the judges, she's covered and the water's covered, and she accepts the old mitzvah, she accepts the mitzvahs, and then she goes in down into the mikveh in front of them. And what happens is that the woman who's helping her out opens up a small piece of the tarp so the judge can see her head going under the water as it's supposed to. They can see it. They don't see anything they're not supposed to see. They see just that, and it's all covered over by that tarp or by that material on the face of the water. It is all good. And then when she gets up, they leave the room, and then she can get dressed, and then everything's fine. So that's how the Rav of Cairo had done it. And he wrote, you know, v'shachein hinikpo mitzrayim, and then Rav Yosef says, but when I got, so this is like, he saw it in a tshuva, this is when I got to Cairo, nobody was doing that. He says, v'mistamanit batel, presumably, it was stopped by anashim bilti hagunim, people who were acting inappropriately, because they had all these sensitivities they shouldn't have had. They said, no, we're not going to do it that way. And Rav Yosef says, Baruch Hashem, Shechazarti HaTorah LeYoshna, I put back in place the old custom of Cairo. Meaning, it's not like I had a new idea. I followed the idea, except that he said, I made one little difference that I think helped out. Another that I said, instead of the way he did it, which was, I think that she like held onto the edge of the tarp and she wrapped it around, and then she went in, and it was complicated. He said, I just said, let's make a slit in the middle of the yiriyah, an opening in the middle of the tarp that's on the face of the water, so that she can put her head through it. And so when the judges come in, she's put her head through the opening, and the opening is just a slit. So that's the same idea. Everything else is covered. You don't see anything. And then when it comes time for her to go into the mikvah, she can, so he says markinat rosha, which means leans her head down. I think that means she can just push down on the tarp with her head, and then once her head goes into the water, they actually have seen her whole head go under the water. They don't see anything else, but they know that her head is attached to her body, so that under her, you know, and the mikvah lady can tell them that she's not wearing any clothing, so that it's a valid immersion, and they actually see her immersed. I think that's what he thinks with the extra special part, because if you have the tarp covering the whole water and she just goes under, you don't actually see her go into the water, you just see her go under the tarp, but theoretically, her head could be above, and that's why you have to have the woman move the tarp, and that could be a complicated thing, because if she moves it too much, so he thought the slit in the tarp was a better way to do it, and that's what he said. And he points out, even though there were Anashim Modernim, there were modern people, he throws in parentheses a few things about this night comments, one of them being Chachamim Be'enehem, that they think that they know better than we do, and they were opposed to this. It's not nice, it's not appropriate that she goes to the mikvah and there are women there, and there are men there, and that they're men, and that's not nice that judges, that rabbis go to mikvah and there are women there, and it's so terrible. And Rabbi Yosef puts in parentheses, I think it's an excellent point. The rak v'lerofei parutz mutar livdok nashim afilu arimot. And certainly in the 1940s, women went to male doctors all the time. And those doctors, if they have professional codes of ethics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, fine. But their personal lives weren't necessarily any more moral than anybody else out there, so they could be just people. Whereas you have Rabbanim, whose job it is to be professionals about these issues as well. So if doctors, they have no worries about, oh, clearly the doctors don't have any appropriate thoughts. It's obviously appropriate and reasonable to be, you know, undressed in front of them and all those things. But for Yigat Talmidei Chachamim, who part of being a Torah scholar is supposed to be that it puts into you, it doesn't always work, but it's the assumption of Torah scholars that they have a chastity, a humility, a modesty, all of those things. But these Modernim don't believe in that. These modern people don't believe in that, which is the exact opposite of the Torah's view of it. Because in Halacha, in fact, there's a difference in the Halachas of Yichud between Kesherim and Prutzim, between people who we can generally, it doesn't mean that there's Isurim, there are prohibitions of Yichud for everybody, but the specifics of the Halacha, depending on who the person is, there's differences. So for example, that pops into my mind as I'm reading this, he didn't give examples, he just says it, but example, there are times when in Halacha, you know, men and animals having Yichud together would be a problem because you'd have to worry that something would happen, not that we're supposed to worry that, so it depends on the people. There are people who have no interest in that, and therefore we don't have to worry about that. But there are people who unfortunately do, and those people have a problem with Yichud. In any case, so he goes on a little bit more about these Modernim and who are against it and all these things. But then he says, but thank God I managed to convince the current chief rabbi of Cairo, and he agreed that the man of the court, the shamash of the Beit Din, the person who oversees the Beit Din, the administrator, should listen to what I said. And that's what I've started as the minute again. This day, the 18th of Cheshvan, that's why we're reading this Chivon this day, the 18th of Cheshvan of Tafshin Ched of 1947. Then, Sylvia, I had another idea, and this idea also would work very well. He doesn't use it in Cairo because in Cairo they're going to follow the practice of Cairo, but he says, you know, if you can make, and it's a little complicated actually to think about it because material tends to billow up, but he says if you can make some kind of a large garment, a loose garment, loose enough that the water can get in under it when she goes into the mikvah, she can wear that. So, you know, if you have, like it would be, let's say, a robe or what's I think called a mumu, if you had like a huge, large dress, the problem is that the water will push it up, but I think if you sewed it down at the bottom somewhat close so that it can't just billow, it'll billow, but the water will get in. But now, and it's also what you think, he doesn't talk about this at all, when she gets out of the water, it will then be soaked and it will cling to her, so she would quickly put on a towel or whatever, and the judge would be gone by then and then she could get dressed. But the point is, then she can walk into the mikvah and nobody's seeing anything because she's dressed. Now, ordinarily, it's true that we don't want people wearing things as we're worried about chatzitzos and things like that, but by Torah law, by rabbinic law, if you wear a loose garment such that the water can get through, that's the only concern, and such that the water can get through, you can do that. So Rav Yosef says, even according to the Rambam, who thinks that you're not supposed to wear any clothing going to mikvah and immersing, men or women, he thinks, Rav Yosef says, even according to the Rambam, you could argue that if our goal is to stop people from talking about Torah and about halacha in inappropriate ways, and to not let them think that they have any way to look down on Torah and halacha as being inappropriate or indelicate, he says this is that even the Rambam would agree that here you can do that, and that's the way he said he gave an instruction, not just for conversion purposes, but he knew a couple who had to go to a place where there was no mikvah. So you don't need a mikvah in life because you can go to a river, you can go to an ocean, right? But then he's living there for a long time, for, you know, a long time could be 6 months, but that would be six times she needs to go to mikvah, or seven, you know, depending on her cycle, whatever it is. And you don't want to have to not be able to mikveh. He said, so I said to them, she can go to a river and she can do immersion in the mikveh, in the river, so she'll be embarrassed about it. He says, no, she can wear something loose. She wears something loose, so the standard is loose fitting enough that the water will go into all the parts of her body. There's no place where it will be so constricting on her that the water won't be able to get through. So he said, points out, there's a Tosus in Nida that says she shouldn't, that a woman shouldn't go to mikveh in a port because there are people there. So what's the problem with people? The other problem, people there were worried. The problem is that it could be indelicate, but we're worried not that it's delicate because she won't do it when anybody's watching her, but we're worried that she'll run. There won't be any people at some point, and she'll run in to get it done with, and she won't want to risk the fact that people might come along the way, and she'll do it too quickly. So the Rav Yosef says that's only when she's doing it naked, as we generally do. But if she's wearing something, then that should be okay. And he thinks that's as good or better a solution, because then there's no worry about the tarp and the slit and the seeing and the that. So he thinks that's even a better solution, not just for mikvah, but even going to need. So why do we always do this? And the answer is you don't always do this, because there are people who won't realize the halacha, won't understand the halacha, and they'll maybe wear garments that are too clingy and too constricting, and therefore the water won't get there, and that won't be a valid conversion, but if a Nida woman does it, it won't be a valid immersion, and she'll still be a Nida. But now a case in the review, say, well, there's a tzedius issue, right, and you want to not have the judge see anything. It's appropriate. He thinks it's perfectly appropriate to be mekel, to be lenient about this. And then he notes that he saw a responsum of Rav Uziel's from when Rav Uziel was the Rav in Salonika, before he got there to Israel, or in between, and sometime he went to Salonika to be the Rav, and the mikveh there was actually in the bathhouse. So in the bathhouse, there were non-Jew, it was a men's section and a women's section. In the women's section, it wasn't just a mikvah, it was like a bathhouse. So there were non-Jewish women there. So that's really terrible, embarrassing, inappropriate, immodest for Rabbanim, for the rabbis of the Beit, the court, to go there. So since it was going to be such an embarrassing thing, he goes through a whole discussion about it, and his kula was that maybe she can go to mikveh without the Beit Din right there. And he says, because a shadat chak, this is the example that I said I was going to mention before, a shadat chak is like a bidiyavit. So in that case, since there's no other option, it's like they have no other option, like a bidiyavit, it's like it's already happened. And we've said, when it's already happened, so then you can rely on the idea that there are those people who hold, then an immersion, even without the Beit Din right there, as long as they know that it happened, could qualify as a valid immersion for conversion. It points out also that in Salonika, there were converts coming along, even though that's a Muslim country. In Turkey, there were converts that Rav Uziel had to deal with. Rav Yosef isn't even so sure that was okay in Salonika, because he thinks that the thrust of halacha is that the judges should have to see it. And then he pointed out, and that much of the resistance is coming from people who don't have proper halachic sensitivities. He points out that it came up in Eretz Yisrael too once he got back there. So he's publishing Yabi Almir years later. When he's going through it again, and it came up again, he says, people showed him another sefer where in his city, this is a sefer called Beit Avraham, in his city, the only place to immerse was in a place that was owned by non-Jews, and the rule was that if men go into the women's section, there's a punishment, there's a fine, maybe imprisonment, it's all a big deal from the government, and therefore, if Jewish judges as a court would go there to watch a woman this, so that would be a terrible thing. It would not only be punishable, it would be a big chilul Hashem. And therefore, he sent the question about it. Rav Shmuel Salant said to him, that in that situation, you can have the convert go with women that the court trusts with the Beit Din. The Beit Din will go as far as they're allowed to go, and then the observant trustworthy women will take the convert further in and they'll verify it for it. So that's because, does Rav Yosef, that's because there was a sakana in that situation. There was danger, there was chilul Hashem, and therefore that's clearly like a bidiyavid gomer. But fundamentally, court judges should be there, and we should ignore, this is a big intercurrent of the responsive, we should ignore and not pay attention to people who bring sensitivities that are not Torah sensitivity to the issue. That having been said, making sure that the judges don't see what they shouldn't see and finding ways to do that within halacha is certainly a good thing to do. And Rav Yosef is even very comfortable with the woman wearing something that is loose enough that it's a garment, so their judges aren't going to see anything they shouldn't be seeing, but it's loose enough the water gets in, and then she can immerse in that, and then they can leave the room, and she can come up, even though it's going to cling to her body at that point. They won't be there for that, and she'll just get changed into dry clothing, she'll dry off, and everything will be fine. So that is Rav Yosef's Tshuva for the 18th day of Cheshvan, teaching us about ways to go to mikvah for immersion to be a convert, but also sometimes in times of stress or times where it's not easy to fulfill the mitzvah, even for ordinary women, to be able to go to mikvah in a way that they can go to mikvah for their nida purposes and not have any worry about lack of modesty, lack of proper dress. Responsible day for the 18th of Cheshvan. Have a great day.